Hi, my name is Winston Bromley. I'm 49 as of today. The location I'm currently in is up in Toronto, Ontario. Today's date is June 14th, 2021. And my relationship with my interviewee today is coworker and friend, Mike O'Dell. Mike, tell us a little bit about you.
Thank you, Winston. So yeah, my name is Michael O'Dell. I'm 33 years old, located in Bandera, Texas, just outside of San Antonio. And today is June 14th.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on here. I really appreciate you being here and doing this for the archives. So what do you remember about when you first enlisted, like the day that you enlisted? What do you remember about that day?
Yeah, Winston. So when I enlisted in the Marine Corps, I wasn't sure what branch of service I was going to join. I just knew that I was going to join the military. And I went down to the recruiting station and so I was on probation. Mm-hmm. And I went down to the recruiting station, and the Navy was my first choice, and they told me no. And I passed right by the Army, and the Marine recruiter, Staff Sergeant Kiorga, jumped out. He's like, "Hey, man, you're on probation?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "I can help with that." and so brought me in his office, man. I signed up that day. Parents didn't know anything about it, and I went home and let them know that I would be leaving for boot camp in a couple months. And awesome. That was how I joined. Why the Marine Corps? Mm-hmm. Well, he popped out of his office and pulled me in.
So what actually made you go down to enlist?
So I wanted to, right. Great question. I wanted to, like I said, I was in trouble. I had no direction, no guidance. I wasn't really going anywhere in life. And I wanted to go somewhere. Right. And mm-hmm. so that was, for me, that was probably the only out that I saw I could take was joining the military. And so I drove down there and went through that process.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about your deployments that you had.
So I was stationed. So when I joined the Marine Corps, I was stationed with 3rd Battalion, 3rd Marines out of Kei Bay, which is in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. So it was cool, man. I was the only one from boot camp and combat training that got sent over there. Everybody else got the East Coast or the West Coast, right? San Diego or Camp Lejeune. And I got sent to Hawaii, man. And so that felt special, right? I felt like, you know, unique. And went to Hawaii, and 3-3 had just left for Fallujah in 2006. Mm-hmm. And so when I got there, my unit was gone. And they told me that I was going to just be back with the Remain Behind element for 6-7 months, however long the unit was going to be gone. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of disappointing, right? Because then I was worried. Mm-hmm. My guys, I haven't met yet. I'm a boot. No experience overseas. They're going to come back fresh from a deployment. And here's this new guy, right? Just sitting there, been kicking back in Hawaii while they're all off in Iraq. I was worried about it, you know? And
can I just ask a quick question? For people who are unfamiliar with the military, what's the 3-3 and what's a boot?
So 3-3 is 3rd Battalion, 3rd Marines. America's Battalion out of Hawaii. There's three battalions there, 1-3, 2-3, and 3-3. And they constantly rotate. One deploys, one trains, and one's back. And it's just a constant rotation. And a boot is someone who's never had their boots on the ground overseas. So that was me, fresh out of boot camp. You know, hence the word boot. Fresh out of boot camp, no deployments. That was me. And so... so I was worried about that. And 2 weeks later, they came and got me, and I went down to get my gear from supply. And they shipped me to Iraq by myself on a commercial flight. So my first deployment, fresh out of boot camp, I was on a commercial flight, right, from Hawaii to Cali, Cali to Maine, and then from Bangor, Maine to Kuwait. And that flight scared the life out of me. I was by myself, right? I was probably the only American on that flight, and I was heading overseas to a war zone, just terrified from the flight that I was on. And we got there and my unit came and picked me up, and you know, we went on the deployment, and it wasn't a bad deployment. You know, they 3-3 had lost a lot of Marines the deployment before that. The one I didn't go on, I wasn't in at the time. And so they were all charged up, you know, from that previous deployment. They were charged up, ready to get back. Right. And not much happened on that deployment. You know, we were there 6-7 months, came back home. And then we deployed again, you know, after leave and all that stuff. But Hawaii was nice, man. You know, being stationed there, it's beautiful. You know, lots of stuff to do for a little while. And then it's just an island, though, right? And so then you're stuck on that island. But then we deployed again, and our second deployment was to Ramadi. And that's where things kind of changed for me, was on our second deployment. You know, a lot of stuff happened. We lost a good friend.
What was your friend's name?
What's that?
What was your friend's name?
Spencer.
We'll talk about him in a minute.
Okay.
Go on.
And, but yeah, that's where things kind of changed for me. It was a fairly calm deployment minus, you know, a few things. We did a lot of night missions. We did, the first deployment, we did a lot of training the Iraqi army to defend themselves and kind of hold the cities and just take over so that we could step back. Right. That was what that deployment was about, was just training the Iraqi army and the locals. Second deployment was focused all on night missions. But something that we did that I think is pretty awesome on our second deployment. So there's a Captain Spiker. He went down in Desert Storm. He was a pilot. And so this is many years before we were over there. But he went down in Desert Storm and his body was never recovered. I don't know the entire story. The plane, I think they knew where the wreckage was, but they didn't know if it was shot down or mechanical malfunction. And I don't even know. I didn't follow through with any of that, or I don't remember, but I remember the mission, right? And so we were sent out, Kilo Company was sent out to go find his body. Right. Years later, we're running a bunch of night missions in out of Ramadi. And then we get this, things calm down and we get this mission to go find Captain Spiker's body. And so Kilo Company's out there sifting through sand. Some locals knew where the crash site was. Go out there. They find pieces of the plane, digging and digging and digging and digging and digging. And it was like, you know, a kid playing in a sandbox. You know, when you're a kid, you're playing in a sandbox. You can do all kinds of stuff. You can build cities. You can build tunnels and bridges and all this different stuff. And we're out there, bunch of Marines, right? And just playing in the sand. And we end up finding his body.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, it was a big deal, huge deal. I think – can't remember his name. I think it was Truoff. Not sure. But they found the body. You know, the mission was over. They flew him home. It was a big deal. The family finally got their father, their husband, their uncle, who that man was to them, that warrior. They got him home. I think it was to the Carolinas, North or South Carolina. Had a proper memorial. All that stuff. And President Obama came out and gave an award to, I think it was our first sergeant or our sergeant major. I don't remember. But he got an award, some sort of presidential award. It was pretty cool, man. So there were some pretty cool things that happened on the deployment.
Yeah. Now, you were talking about Spencer. So can you tell us a little bit about him?
Yeah, so he was with us. He's young. He died at 20. He's from California. He's a good guy, man. Full of life. You know, I mean, we were all young, 19, 20, 21. He had deployed once already. So this was his second deployment and my second one as well. And, you know, he had a girlfriend back home, just super, super cool dude, tip of the spear Marine, you know, looked the part, acted the part, lived the part. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you never really know what's going on in someone's head. You know, people can look, put on that mask, right? People can look happy and not be happy. People can look like they've got the world at their fingertips and really it's falling apart. So you never really know what someone's really going through. And he ended up taking his own life while we were on that deployment. With it, like about a month into the deployment, is April 16th, 2009. And, you know, that how we found out was just, I mean, it was horrible. So, like I said, we were running night missions, right? And so we're on Camp Ramadi. We're not out on missions. We're back at base. All, you know, guys are playing on their PlayStations in their rooms, sleeping, racked out, over at the chow hall, eating midnight rations, right? Cheesecake and lobster. And I'm laying in my bunk. Most of us are sleeping. It was late at night. But I'm laying in my bunk. And next thing, and we're on base. And the next thing you know, we hear a ton of gunshots. And it's like, holy crap, right? So everybody gets up, gets their rifles. We don't know what's going on. We're not getting attacked because we're on base. Like, there's no way we're getting attacked. And so everybody's walking around the barracks, the squad bays we were in, and couldn't really figure out what was going on until he was found in the bathroom. And that's when it clicked, like, oh shit, this is what happened. Like, this is real. And like, you know, the day before that, it was smiles and life is great, you know? And then, like I said, man, you never really know what someone's going through.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for sharing that. what when you were over there and obviously going through the training in Hawaii all the way over to Ramadi and Fallujah, what kind of habits did you pick up while you were in the service that helped you like just perform better? And also stuff that you could have taken outside of like outside of your military life.
So I'm glad you asked those questions, Winston. And there's some good things and there's some bad things.
Of course, tell us both.
And so we'll talk about that. So and you know about a lot of it. So you know Marine Corps values, honor, courage, and commitment. And you know, there's something that happens to an individual when you bring on those values, right? Honor, courage, and commitment. They're beat into your brain. You eat it, you live it. Like, that's what you do as a Marine, that's what you should do as a person, as a father, husband, friend, whatever. Honor, courage, and commitment. And I was a tip of the spear kind of Marine. You know, my PT was on point. My physical fitness, it was on point. I was doing good on all my tests. I shot expert on the range. So like, those are some of the things that I can still shoot good. Okay. My physical fitness is back on point. You know, I'm still motivated and dedicated in the gym with my life. And I think I got those values and those ambitions from the Marine Corps and those habits. You know, I fell off for a while when I got out, but those are some things. And then I think one of the biggest ones that people might not even is making your bed. I still make my bed. I still make my bed every morning and it sets my day up for success. Mm-hmm. It's a small thing, but it's a huge win. And that's, I don't, And my hair, mm-hmm. my hair's on point.
It is.
It always has been. But before I joined the Marine Corps, it wasn't. I had long hippie hair and I had like dreadlocks and braids and stuff. And I smoked pot and, and I joined the Marine Corps. They shaved it off and I've had a high and tight ever since.
Awesome. Awesome. So, okay, so getting to that kind of side of things, what kind of fun things did
a question? I'm sorry, please. Before we move on, do you mind if I ask a question about Spencer?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm just curious. You said earlier that, you know, losing him kind of changed things. And I'm curious how it changed things for you and the people you were deployed with and if there was anything you did to remember him or different things you did moving forward after that.
So it's a great question. So it's a good spot to ask that question. That really leads me into like some other stuff to talk about. We had a memorial for him, you know, out in Iraq. And that was it, right? That was it. Had a memorial, had a small service, and that was it. We still had 6 months of the deployment left to go. Mm-hmm. Right. So that you don't have, that's not the time to be reminiscing and thinking and overthinking, right? Because you have missions at hand. You have things you got to do. You have other brothers that need you to be at your top. Right. So had the service and that was it. Boom, done. Mm-hmm. And the deployment went on. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of stuff was, now I know, was never really processed, you know? And so I'll add this, before this deployment, I definitely had picked up a habit before I joined the Marines, drinking alcohol. Mm-hmm. And, it definitely escalated while I was in the Marines to a very, dangerous and unhealthy amount. But it didn't affect my service until we came back from this deployment. That's when the alcohol really started to impact me as a professional, as a tip of the spear Marine. I'm now falling. Mm-hmm. And so is my reputation. And so are my values, honor, courage, commitment. Now I'm breaking my values that I made to myself, that I made to the Marine Corps, my commitments. They're falling through. And I'm not saying it was because of that, because of what happened over there. But what I will say is when we came back, it was different. My life was in a super dark, dark place. And I really just turned to the bottle. Like it was just a daily thing. And in fact, when we got back, so this is kind of sometimes hard to talk about, but I'll share it. Hopefully someone listens and it'll help them out. But, when I got back from, when we got back from the second deployment, like I said, my alcohol was through the roof. It was it was bad. And, I stopped hanging out with my battle buddies and I started to isolate myself. And I was just drinking by myself and it wasn't fun anymore. It was super dark. It was lonely. It was depressing. It was a real bad place to be. And then one night I was out in town, out in Hawaii, and I ended up getting drugged. I don't know who knows who did it. I have no idea. I remember, but I don't know, you know, who it was. Complete strangers, but I got drugged, suffered sexual trauma, and I was so high on whatever drugs that it was, I didn't even remember what happened until many months later. And sometimes that's what happens with trauma, right? Like when we lost Spencer, we didn't, it was 6 more months of our deployment. Didn't even think about it. Right. Mm-hmm. So then we come back home and now we're starting to think about all this stuff.
Yeah.
I think that's what happens. That's one of the things that a lot of service members struggle with and go overseas and that are in direct combat. They lose their brothers and sisters in arms due to enemy fire, right? And then you can't stop to process that. You got to continue to push forward. And so you don't do anything until you come home. Hmm. It could be 1 month later. It could be a year later. And the Army deploys for 15 months sometimes. Hmm. So you've got this huge time gap without processing anything. And that's kind of what happened to me when the sexual trauma happened. Hmm. A couple months later, I start to remember like what happened. And I'm like, no, you know what I mean? Like, no way. I know I was drunk that night, but like, that, no way. Sure. And then it became more real and more real and more real. Mm-hmm. And the realer it became, the more I suppressed it with booze. Mm-hmm. I mean, just real bad.
Yeah. Well, why don't we talk about that? Like, so you came back from all that, like towards the end of your military career. Why don't we talk about there, or not to the end of that, but when did you leave the military? And let's start down that path.
Okay. So I got out of the Marines in 2010. I got an honorable discharge. When I thought about reenlisting again, because like I said in the beginning, I joined to get out of whatever it was that I was in, right? And I wanted to stay in, even though I was struggling so bad. And so I talked to them about reenlisting. And I had gotten in trouble. I got in a fight with a staff NCO, like a fist fight. And so that's not good, right? And I got in trouble for that. I started, you know, getting in trouble. I got in trouble a few times, got NJP'd. I think every good Marine gets non-judicial punishment at least once. So I checked that box. I'll tell you, interview another Marine and ask him if he's ever been NJP.
Hold on. Winston, do you mind turning off your alerts?
My alerts are not on. Can you turn off yours?
I'm getting like a cell phone ding or something like that coming through.
Yeah. It's turned off as much as it can be.
Okay.
I'm in my office and the volume is turned down as much as it can go on the phone.
Okay. Sorry, Winston. I thought it was coming from you.
Oh, that's okay.
All right. Hopefully. Sorry. Go ahead and continue. Thank you.
Where were we at?
So when you were talking about coming back from the deployment, and then how everything you went through the NJP.
Yeah, I remember. So I was getting in trouble. So they wouldn't let me reenlist. And they told me my time in the Marine Corps was done. And with that, right, I put on the Marine identity. You know, I'm a Marine. I'm a Marine till the day I die. Once a Marine, always a Marine, right? That's the mentality. That's what's beating your head. And I love it, right? I still say, I don't say I was former Marine, all that mumbo jumbo. I'm a Marine, just not in no more. And so they wouldn't let me reenlist. And the one thing that they did for me in my transition, and this is super, you catch the sarcasm. The one thing they did for me was send me to an hour long alcohol awareness class. And I had a crazy problem with alcohol. Ain't no way an hour long class was going to help me. But I went to it. After that, I got my DD 214 and I was done. Mm-hmm. And I was so pissed off at the Marine Corps. I left my awards, my ribbons, my marksman badges, my uniforms, my boots, dog tags, left everything in Hawaii. Packed a backpack, caught the plane, and came home. Like literally left everything. And totally regret it now. But I left everything, man. I was done. I was lost. Came back home to Texas. And that was a difficult transition because like I said, that identity. Now what do I do? I'm not in the Marine Corps anymore. And the Marine Corps life, or let's say the military life, right? The military life is completely different, or at least it was then, than civilian life, right? Like,
so just, tell us about that.
There's so much structure in the military. Everything is structured. In the civilian side of things, there's not much structure. And for the most part, you create your own structure. Especially even if you're an employee, you have a little bit of structure, but you still create your own structure within that structure, right? An employee knows what they need to get done in that day, and everything in between is up to them. Where in the military, there's always someone watching you, someone to report to, someone checking in on you, battle buddy. It's just so different. And so going from this completely structured environment to no job, so I don't even have the structure as a job from an employer right now. I'm out of the military. I'm on terminal leave. I'm done. Nothing. So what do I continue to drink? Continued to drink. And even when I found employment, it was hard. I got a good job in the oil field. And even that was difficult because I know they expected me to know what to do. Like, and they didn't like that I asked so many questions, or I didn't know what it is, what I was supposed to do. They didn't like it. And that job didn't last long, maybe 6 months. And then I got another good job. And I think they didn't last primarily because of the alcohol addiction that I was struggling with, but also that lack of accountability, that lack of leadership. I didn't have any leadership anymore. My faith in God was kaput, right? I had no governing body to help me with anything. And so I just struggled, man. I was sinking. And that went on for about 5 years or so, as a civilian. Always in trouble, man.
So what happened after those 5 years? Because there's some events that we can go through.
Yeah. So within the five, I couldn't stop drinking, and so trouble followed me. Right. So here I am. I'm a Marine. I got an honorable discharge, and I continue to get arrested. Criminal. Right. Just continue to get arrested, and I probably like 30 times, and that's a legit, like, you could probably take that number to the bank, plus or minus one or two, over public intoxications, bar fights, DWIs, drug possessions, drug paraphernalia arrests, like all the above. And that followed me throughout that 5 year timeline. Right. Within that 5 years, I primarily had an alcohol addiction, right? Followed me into the military, got kicked into high gear while I was in, and then skyrocketed when I transitioned out. Right. In 2013, my son was born. And so this was 3 years after I got out of the military. So I got out in 2010. My son was born in 2013. Mm-hmm. I thought, right, like, life is going to be different. Life is going to be better. I'm going to change for my son. And what happened was none of that happened. In fact, it got worse. I switched from alcohol to drugs. And then I had a crazy drug addiction. And it was okay because I wasn't drinking alcohol anymore. Right? Like, that, literally, that's what I told myself. This problem is okay because I got rid of that problem. And 2 years after that, the drug addiction finally kind of led me to the turning point. And that was when I went to prison, right? So So I've got one kid, my son, Tristan, awesome. He's 7 years old, fixing to be eight. And he is just a little spitfire of a little guy. He's awesome. And but I couldn't change for him, you know. And so I go to prison. So this was a turning point, really. Mm-hmm. So when I enlisted into the Marine Corps, I remember this. I remember a 4-year enlistment contract, right? It's like, okay, and I'm signing on the dotted line, 4 years. I got it. I can do this. And I go to, now I'm in jail, right? And so here I am, got some similar papers in front of me, except they're for a completely different place, right? Now I got prison papers in front of me, and it's not for 4 years, it's for 3 years. And I remember how I felt when I signed that 4 years for the Marine Corps. I was like, 4 years, do it. And if you want, stay in. If you don't, get out. It's just 4 years. And so now I'm in court and I'm thinking, it's just 3 years. Do it and get it over with. Yeah. Just sign the paper, do it and get it over with. And so I did. I signed the paper. And the cool thing about this, and this is where things changed, is before I got that 3-year sentence, I prayed probably for the first time for real since before the military. Mm-hmm. I finally prayed and like reignited my faith again. And I asked the Lord, I said, Lord, like, because they wanted to give me 8 years. Mm-hmm. And I was like, Lord, like, 8 years is a lot. Like, let's do three. And I remember I was like, come on, I'll sign on 3 years. Like, I'll do that. I'll sign on it. I'll do my time. I'll do it honorably. I'll commit to that. Right. I'll behave when I'm there. I started making all these agreements with God. And I go to court and the judge gave it to me, man.
Awesome.
The judge freaking, he said, Are you ready to sign on 3 years? And I was like, I thought in my head and I laughed. I was like, yeah, like I am. Like, let's do this. And so I did. And I go to prison. And that's where the game changed for me. I started to work on my relationship with God. Mm-hmm. Started to read like self-help books, right? 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, right? Books like that, right? And I started teaching Bible studies and I started reading the big book, AA, right? I started working a recovery program. And like, that's what I did in prison for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And it was, I made parole, so I didn't even have to do the 3 years, mm-hmm. right? I'm finally on the right track and things are looking up. And the craziest thing, Winston, is that the 2 years that I spent in prison, mm-hmm. were the best I had felt since I was probably like 14 or 15 years old. Like, out of all the memories with my friends and parties and all the fun like I had when I was a kid, I was still kind of like depressed. And then the fun times I had in the Marines, I wasn't living life. Struggling, and I went and there I am sitting in prison, finally feeling free. Crazy. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy to even think, but it's the truth. Sitting in prison, finally feeling free. And so I got out, made parole, and life has just not been the same since, man. Got out in 2018, January, and rode home from Houston with my mom and my dad, mm-hmm. and life hasn't been the same.
Yeah. And you got employment shortly after too.
Then Warrior's Heart hired me, I think 2 months, maybe 3 months, mm-hmm. after I got out of prison.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got your story, right? Like, you've gone through everything that we often deal with. So thank you for that. So you were talking about, you know, coming back down from doing your time, coming out of all that. Tell us a little bit about how you've talked to your children about, you know, when you went over to the military and all that, because obviously they look up to you and what you do.
Yeah. So my daughter's 4, mm-hmm. I didn't mention her yet, but I do have a daughter. She'll be 5 in October. But and they both live with me. That's something. I got custody of my children. Yeah, single father, got custody of my kids, and I've had custody of them since 2018. And so my daughter, she doesn't really know much, but my son, he's 7, fixing to be 8 years old. He asks me all the time. Two of the biggest things he talks about to me when we're in private are in relation to me, right? Is what did I do when I was in the military, and how can he be like me? Right. And the other one is, why did I go to prison? And that's the, I hate it when he asks me that question, but I tell him the truth every time. Mm-hmm. And because he needs to know, right. He needs to know. It's hard for him to believe, because life is really good right now. So it's hard for him to believe. And I don't go into detail with him about being from the military unless it's really kind of positive or funny. Mm-hmm. You know, he's only 7. And then on the other side of things with the prison stuff, I just kind of focus on, like, I wasn't following the rules, right? Life has rules. And that's why it's important to follow, to learn how to follow rules.
Exactly.
One of the coolest things I like talking to him about is being stationed in Hawaii. Because he loves sharks, he loves animals. That's his thing. And I get to talk to him about that, right? Like, Daddy went skydiving in Hawaii. Daddy went snorkeling in Hanama Bay. Those kinds of things he just absolutely loves.
Okay. Well, we're getting towards the end of this. Just two last questions for you. So, what kind of message would you have for future generations that might be watching this?
So, for someone that might be watching or listening to this call, if you want to join the military, do it. It's great. It will teach you leadership. It will teach you life skills. It will teach you a bunch of quality habits, really good habits. It's definitely go. If you want to join the military, go. Be careful on your transition out. Don't think that you got the world at your fingertips, unless you do, I guess. Be careful with that transition, because it is different. The transition is different, and find yourself a healthy support system that can help get you through that transition. It's not a sign of weakness to need a support system going into a new environment, right? It's a sign of intelligence, right? This is new. Maybe I should get a support system to help me with this. Super smart, right? And the other thing is, if you were in the military and you've gotten out and you're struggling, like, reach out for help. They're like, here where I work, Warriors Heart, right? Like, golly, this place is amazing, right? They hired me. Like, it's crazy. I never thought I'd have a life like this or a job like this, but if you're struggling, reach out for help. Reach out and talk to somebody. That's the biggest thing. The biggest thing I could say. If anybody's struggling, they gotta pick up that phone, even though it weighs 1,000 pounds. Pick it up. Call somebody. I don't care who it is. Call us. Call your family. Call your friends. Call your loved ones. Call your old commanders. Somebody. Just give them a call.
Exactly. Well, thank you very much, Mike. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on this and doing this recording. It's been fantastic. Definitely always, you know, a pleasure to hear everything that you've done and how you've become where you've gotten to. So thank you very much for your time on that.
You're welcome, man. Thank you for thank you for being here with me, Winston. I always love talking with you, and I do like to share my story. So I really appreciate StoryCorps, right? StoryCorps
all the way
for helping us out. Definitely. And wanting to hear what I have to say, and just really appreciate it. So thank y'all.
Awesome.